Hey, what's good? This is Rich.
And I'm Marcus.
And you're listening to Paychecks and Balances. We're talking about personal finance and career advice. Won't have you tapping out after 5 minutes.
Yes, sir. And if you're new to the show or been around for a while and haven't done it, be sure to join our free email list where you'll receive access to work and money tips, interesting reads, and more. You'll also receive our free 15-minute money plan as a welcoming gift. Visit paybal.co/email to sign up. Again, that's paybal.co/email.
Indeed. And I don't know if it's just me, but right now it feels like September is our busiest month of the year. I feel like I'm feeling that this year because I'm mentioning it now, but also last year. So I know we're working on our presentation deck for FinCon. We're working on an actual workbook. We're working on a merchandise store, and we're also working on something else special for the PNB Premium members, man. It just feels like there's a lot going on.
I know I'm getting older because like I'm planning in quarters now. Like I'm already thinking about Christmas and like next year. So I'm trying to enjoy this busy September, but it hasn't been easy. So yes, this is a busy month and it looks like it's going to be a busy end of the year.
So who we got on today's episode, fam?
On today's show, we're joined by Barbara Ginty. Barbara's another infamous Yahoo Finance alumni that we've had the pleasure of welcoming to the show. And I see why am I. I'll drop a link to that video in the show notes for your listening pleasure. Barbara started her career on Wall Street working for Bloomberg and equity derivatives, and in her spare time, she found herself helping friends and friends of friends gain confidence with their own personal finances, eventually finding her purpose. Undergoing a career shift to focus on her passion full-time, Barbara received her Certified Financial Planner certification from NYU and now owns a financial firm with two locations and an online presence at Planential Podcast and BarbaraGinty.com.
A mover, a shaker, a go-getter, and now a Paychecks and Balancers guester.
Happy to welcome you to the show, Barbara. Are there any other exciting plot twists in your life you'd like to share with the listening audience?
No plot twists at the moment, which I would say I'm thankful for.
All right. Well, I think we should just jump right into it. I opened up the questions to the Facebook group, which you should be a member of, if not, shame on you. And they got an opportunity to address their questions. So let's just talk about certified financial planning. That's why we're here. Can you briefly explain what financial planning means for the average person or family?
Sure. Yeah. So let's talk about what the CFP is, because a lot of people aren't familiar with that. So I'm a certified financial planner, which is a designation that you get. It usually takes about 2 years. And then once you pass the exam, which was 10 hours, it was a tough exam, you continue to take continuing education. So you do 30 credits every 2 years. So you're constantly staying up to date on everything that's happening in the industry. Because as you can imagine, things change on a regular basis, whether it's tax laws or mainly, I mean, the tax laws change all the time, but changes to Social Security, taxes. There's always changes, so it's important to stay on top of it, which is why we have the continuing education. I got it because it just means that you've gone through the extra step of spending 2 years studying, you know, estate planning, insurance planning, tax planning, investments, because there's a lot more that goes into personal finance than investing. So I wanted to just kind of explain what the CFP is as a starting ground. You're familiar with it, right, Marcus?
I am, but can you elaborate on that a little bit? What do you mean, or what else goes into financial planning beyond personal finance and investing?
Yeah, well, I think the one thing I always hear, and I think it's a misnomer, is that people always associate personal finance with investing. And that's just one component of your personal finance life. So even if you do that well, if the rest of your personal finance life isn't in order, then you're probably not going to be successful, right? Because it's the minority stake in your personal finance life. So when you're looking at your personal finances, which is very similar to the CFP and how you study to get that designation, you look at insurance, you look at taxes, you look at basics like budgeting. Investments is one component, insurance, and then also estate planning as well.
And so is there an area where you typically see your clients need to start, you know, whether it's with budgeting or... Well, I'd assume for most folks, it's not starting with investing.
Yeah, you don't want to start with investing. The foundation of it is really having a handle on what your income is and then what your expenses are. And to be honest, that's the part that most people hate to do. Mm-hmm. That's where I get the most objections. You know, they're much more interested in like, oh, I found a really good ETF or index fund I want to invest in. And then you're like, oh, let's start with your budget. And they're like, whoa, it's not what I want to talk about today.
And I've heard one approach is the four pillars or the four L's of planning. Are you familiar with those? If not, I can kind of walk through at a high level what I've heard about that.
Sure. That's just one way to do financial planning. And that comes more into play when you're doing a deep dive on your retirement planning. So with the four L's, what they're referring to is longevity, lifestyle, liquidity, and legacy. Because when you're planning for retirement, I think the big thing that is different today than it used to be, to give you an example, my father was also a certified financial planner, as was my aunt was a certified financial planner, and they did it in the 80s. And back then you planned for a 15-year retirement. And now, one generation later, myself, when I'm working with individuals, we plan for anywhere between 20 and 30 years.
Yeah.
So at the long end of that, that's almost a double in one generation. So when you're planning for your retirement, planning for longevity is important, because what you don't want to do is wake up on your 85th birthday and feel wonderful and realize that you only planned to have money until yesterday.
Well, I mean, first off, we got to make it to 85, but.
You have to make it 85. But statistically, it's more likely that you're going to live to be, in your 90s, depending on what your age is currently. I think it was Prudential ran an ad that the person who is going to live to be 150 years old has already been born. Did you see that ad? I don't spot check their marketing materials, by the way. So I can't verify that. But I think it was a Prudential ad that ran that. But people live longer today. So a lot of people, longevity is something that you need to plan for with your retirement, because you could have a working career where you're saving for 30 years. But then you could also very well have a retirement where you're spending for 30 years.
Yeah, that's a good point.
If you think about it that way.
And you said, if I'm not misspeaking here, that income and budgeting are at least some of the most important aspects, but often the most overlooked. So why are those the most important? And what is like the first step for someone to go about building their financial plan?
There's a first step among many. I think the first step is getting started, right? Being willing to sit down and do the work. Like anything else, it's work. It doesn't happen overnight. And there's no real quick fix if you want to get control of your finances and come up with a strategy, because you really should evaluate all the various areas. I think the key is really just sitting down and being diligent and figuring out, where is my income? Where are my expenses? And then what are my goals and how am I going to get there? Most people are very reactive when it comes to their money, right? So their money comes in, they pay, they go through their month like they would. And then at the end of the month, they're like, oh, well, I only had $100 left over. That's a reaction, right? The money came in, the money went out. And then now at the end of the month, you only have $100, rather than saying, okay, where is my money getting spent? Is this really how I want to use it? And maybe working backwards. So this is what my income is going to be. And this is really how much I want to allocate to each of these areas.
Got it. And so where do you see people either overspending or having the biggest opportunity to reduce their expenses, where they might think it's a necessity, but it turns out it's much more of a want versus a need?
That's a really good question, because that comes up often, because a lot of people ask, how do you balance between, living for today and also planning for tomorrow? Because it is a balance to be able to do both. And most of it just comes down to determining what is most important to you. So, some people will say, for instance, that the gym is really important, so they're willing to spend money on a nice gym membership and sacrifice something else. What it normally comes down to for most people, and everyone's needs and wants are a little bit different, right? So one person might want to spend the money on the gym, while another person might want to spend the money on getting coffee every day. It depends on who you are. But typically what it comes down to is you can't really have all of it now and then also have your long-term goals, right? So if you don't allocate a portion for the future, it really just is going to get spent throughout the month, whether that's on the gym or going out to eat or paying for, like an Uber rather than public transportation or something to that mannerism. So it just depends on the person when I sit down with them. But I see very often, because Marcus, as you know, I have a podcast where I interview women about their money. We always say how we find money at the end of it. And it's not that that there was an investment that they were unaware of. It's really when we sit down and go through the budget and they say, I really want to take a vacation every year, or I want to get rid of my student loans. We're like, okay, well, let's then now look at where your money is going. Would you rather have that gym membership and then pay out, it's going to take you 3 or 4 more years to pay off the student loan, or would you give that up for 2 or 3 years to get rid of the student loans and use, YouTube workout videos for free, and then now you're out from underneath that student loan? And then when it's given like that, when that's the choice, typically they make a different decision.
And we're all about the hashtag plug. So what is the name of that podcast so that people can find it?
Sure. It's the Planential Podcast.
And along those lines, how does someone know or who needs a certified financial planner? Like, when do they know that that is a discussion they need to have?
I mean, I guess the one way to look at it is everybody should probably have a doctor, right? Not everybody does. People sometimes wait until they're sick to find a doctor. I would say it's probably the same thing with the CFP. Your money, they usually rank money and health around one and number one and two for individuals, right? Where they would place them in priority. So I think that most people should be working on their financial future. And I think it's better to do it proactively rather than when there's an issue, kind of like with the doctor, rather than waiting till you're sick to call the doctor. They call them wellness checkups, right? You go once a year, check in, make sure everything's on track. That's kind of how I would reference having a CFP.
For the people who would be interested, is there a body or entity? How do they find a good CFP, a reliable one?
So because it's a designation, it's overseen by the CFP board, which you can find at cfp.org. And you can go online and they have a directory of all the CFPs in the country.
Yeah, that was straightforward.
Yeah, very easy.
So when it comes to finance, personal finance, I think this touches on Rich's question a little bit. What is the biggest risk or gap you see in just people's knowledge or preparation?
Well, people think it's much harder than it is. So sometimes I find people that they don't get started because they find it to be overwhelming. And I think the overwhelming part is just when you put things off for too long and you build it up in your mind that's going to be really hard or it's not going to be a positive experience, I think that the psychology part of it is really what makes it difficult. Once you sit down and figure it out, it can be fairly straightforward. It's not rocket science.
I say there are folks out there, and I even put myself in this bucket in some way. So there are people out there where they're trying to get their finances in order. They're trying to save more money. They're trying to get out of debt, but they also have the entrepreneurship bug. And so they're trying to save money. They're trying to get out of debt, but they're also trying to get a business off the ground that might allow them to work independently for themselves or might allow them to have a side hustle for the long term if they want to stay in corporate America. Is there a different approach for those folks where they may have the entrepreneurial interest and they're trying to get to a point where they can get this business off the ground, but they're also trying to lay the foundation for their current financial state as well as for their future?
Yes, I think when being an entrepreneur, it makes it a little bit trickier, right? Because you're going to be taking risks when you're an entrepreneur, and sometimes you have to spend money to make money. And that can be pretty tricky, especially if you have debt you want to pay off. So I think what my suggestion would be as a general suggestion in that case is you really just have to hustle and probably work your entrepreneurial, you know, side hustle as a side hustle until you're more prepared to take a financial risk.
Is there any guidance for folks on how to know if they're more prepared or more ready? Because I guess for some folks, it could be a feeling, but is there a general, you know, once you have 3 months of income saved or 3 months of expenses, once you have six months of expenses, and I realize that's going to vary for a lot of people, but is there any general guidance if someone's like, when should I be ready to make this a full-time thing?
My take on it is if you're going to go and try and launch a business, you don't want to go into that if you already have a big debt. So it just depends on how much you have in student loans, right? So if you have a big student loan bill coming in every month and you want to quit your job to start a business, I just feel like that would be a lot of financial pressure, right? Because you're going to have to spend money and you might have, you know, if you have a $500 or $1,000 bill coming in every month for student loans, you don't want to get yourself too underwater, right? Because not all businesses work out and it can take longer than you anticipate and take more money. So in a perfect world, I would say you wouldn't want to have any debt so that you give yourself a really good runway in order to start that business, right? Because then you have a lot more flexibility to see it out longer than if you only have a 6 month runway. And if it doesn't work, then you have to go back to corporate America. So in a perfect world, I would say you wouldn't want to do it until you have most of your debt paid off. And that would be credit card debt and, you know, student loan debt. Obviously, if you have a mortgage, that's a better debt, depending if you have a partner that could maybe supplement and pay for the mortgage for the time while you're trying to start a business. That's another conversation. Okay. Marcus, you like having no debt, right?
I do. And I realize it happens. It apparently only takes a weekend. So that's actually going to be my question. So for people, we've had a few listeners, I think we've even had a few guests who took on business loan debt to start a business. What are your thoughts on that? So let's say they are at zero debt, but they want to take out, you know, 50 or 20,000 to start this new business. Is that a smart decision in your opinion?
Yes, I think that's prudent. And that is why I wouldn't go into it already having debt, right? Because to start a business can be expensive and it usually takes longer than you think it will to get off the ground. That's a prudent risk. So if you run the numbers and determine in order to start your business to get you to the place you want to be in your career, it's going to cost $50,000 or $100,000. That's a business decision and that makes sense. I would be nervous about someone going into that if they already owe, let's say, $200 in student loans, right? Okay. Now you have a lot on your plate and not only financial stress, but then a lot of pressure to make sure this business is viable in the time frame that you've allotted.
True, true. And so let's say I'll take the Nick Fury approach. We're building the Avengers for this financial dream team. What does that look like? Is it a couple of ones that I jotted down? Is it a CFP, CPA, a lawyer? Like, what would that, in your estimate, what would that team look like, a financial team for success?
I love this question because I feel, I say this all the time to my clients, that it's really important to have a team, because I'm a CFP, but I'm not a CPA, and I'm also not an attorney. Right? So I can give guidance on certain things, but I cannot execute a will or anything like that. And a lawyer went to school to do something very specific. I went to school to do something very specific, and so did a CPA. So I think your dream team would be a CFP, a CPA, and then an attorney. And then more importantly, depending on your situation, maybe an estate attorney. So typically an estate attorney is also a CPA and an attorney. Because estate planning involves a lot of tax law planning.
Now, estate planning, I've seen a lot more about that recently because there was a story that came out that Aretha Franklin, she passed away and she didn't have an estate plan, which is pretty crazy given the level of money that she has.
Michael Jackson did either. A lot of famous people don't do it. Most people don't do it. Most, I forget what the statistic is, but most Americans don't have a will.
Wow. When do people, and I almost feel like this is an obvious question after hearing that part, but when should folks really start thinking about estate planning? Because I can tell you from experience, it's not something that I've really had a conversation with anyone about unless they had a family. So for most folks, if they're single, they feel invincible and so on. When should folks really start thinking about that? Is it right now today?
Yeah, it's right now. We're going to do yours right now. We'll do it on the podcast. So you don't need, this is what I always say, you do not need to have an estate in order to have an estate plan. It's a little bit backwards in thinking, right? Because you think estate plan, I need to have an estate for that plan to be, you know, to come to fruition. You actually don't need an estate for an estate plan. The second you start having, I would say, any sort of asset. So I always like to say, once you get rid of the IKEA furniture, maybe, and you own something, whether that be an apartment, a condo, a house, or an investment account, really anything of value, that's when you really need to have an estate plan. What you really want to do is you either need to have a will or you're going to need to use contracts, which is where you're going to use beneficiaries. And as soon as you have anything of value, you want to have one of these things in place, ideally both. And then you could use the will as a catch-all.
And so I'd like to briefly, I've jotted down while we were talking here, this is my verbal will because I don't have any beneficiaries or children at this time. But yes. Jamel.
I guess it's documented by audio. So
yeah, I'm trying to document this.
I don't think we're at the. Yeah, I don't think we're at the point where they take an audio will.
I'm going to do it just in case, because this might be all they can go back to. So Jamel, I ask that you delete my internet history and throw all my electronics in the deepest part of the ocean. I leave everything else to my mother. So
let's walk through this a little bit more, because this is complicated. And this is actually when you brought up the four L's of retirement planning. One of them is legacy, right? And so that is really where the estate plan comes into place. And so when you get into retirement or planning for retirement, when you're further along in your working career, it becomes a bit more complicated. When you're younger, it's still really important. So let me give you an example. If you have an IRA or a Roth IRA or a work plan, you need to make sure that you have a beneficiary on that. Right? Because that's an asset. Whether it's $5,000 or $10,000, you want to make sure it goes to somebody, right? So that essentially falls under estate planning, because if anything happens to you, where would that account go? Now, having a will is also important, just because if for some reason that person isn't available to inherit that account, who would it go to? And maybe some of your personal effects, where would they go to? And at Marcus, as you said, how would you want your internet
destroyed
assets? You want the internet destroyed. How would you want your internet assets handled? You know, you want your Facebook account deleted, you want this done or that done. If there are no instructions, it goes by state law. So you want to leave instructions.
And that's my follow-up question. So actually your comment was interesting to me. So if they don't take a verbal decree, if you will, what are the elements of a legal contractual will? Is it something you could jot on a napkin, or what would stand up in court, so to speak, or probate?
So since I'm not an attorney, I can't give you a real answer on that.
I just knew it. I am not getting my feet in this hot water. No.
It sounds like a hashtag plug to the attorneys in the listening audience. And I kind of wish we had asked the attorney that who's going to be on a future show. But we'll get that resolved, folks. We'll get that question.
So my recommendation is you can use an attorney to do a will, and you can also get your other pertinent documents like a healthcare proxy set up with them. You can also go online and, you know, use one of the online legal sites, if you will. I always prefer working with a person because I think that then you establish a relationship. So if you need anything down the road, you already have that relationship set up with an attorney. And as we talked about, I think the real dream team is if you have a CPA, a CFP, and an attorney. So that's one way to get your relationship started with an attorney. And like anything else, because I think usually I get asked, well, then how do you find an attorney? I think it's really good to check their credentials and then also to get referrals from people that you know and trust. And I would do a couple of meetings and see who you feel comfortable with.
So anything in particular on the credentials front? Because that could be a lot of different things. And I'm sure there's a lot of different agencies. There's a lot of different directories. So is there a baseline that you would tell clients to look for if they are looking for an attorney?
So if you're just getting a really basic will and you're in the beginning of your life, and you're beginning of your need for an estate plan, really is probably the best way to think about it, then you can probably just look for an attorney, and I would use a reference and someone that you feel comfortable with. If you're further along in your career and you need to do more intensive estate planning going into retirement or in retirement, then I would look for an attorney that also, you know, focuses with estate planning, and they usually then also are a CPA.
And let me ask this, in fairness, possibly to myself, but definitely less to the audience, because so many individuals don't do these activities we're talking about, they may not have someone to go to have for a referral. Is there any source or entity similar to what we were talking about with the CFP that you would recommend? Or is it just, you know, your local Google?
Oh, I wouldn't use your local Google. I don't know of a site off the top of my head. I'm sure it's something I can find out. So let's just say that you have part of your dream team, right? You have a CPA and you have a CFP, then they can give you references.
Okay. All right. I appreciate that. And I'm going to jump into the listener question. So if your listener question is not here, that's probably because you did not participate in the question, which will still be out there as we rotate through this CFP financial planning information. You can visit paychecksandbalances.com, hit that Ask PB button, or you can join the Facebook group, which we'll plug at the end of the show to get you that information. So we dropped it on the socials. We actually got a lot of feedback on this. We'll be getting these in and addressing them throughout the month. And from Instagram, possibly mispronouncing, Mon Cheri says, does it make sense? And I think she's asking as far as order to pay off student loans or purchase your first home.
So purchasing your first home is really important because it's a great way to build your net worth. And right now with interest rates, they're still fairly low. So I wouldn't say you have to do one or the other. I would try and do both depending on where your student loans are. So if you could get your loans paid off in a year and then buy the home, that would be ideal. Usually people have much longer to go on their loan. So I would try and maneuver so that you could do both.
And from Facebook, thank you. From Tamika, I'm just hitting first names here. I'd ask a little about wills and trusts, when to create one and what assets justify putting one together.
Perfect. So we kind of hit. So basically the way to think about it is I think everybody should have a will and should have a healthcare proxy. And that basically is who can make decisions for you if you get sick and are unable to make decisions. And so I think that's important to get in the beginning. So I don't know when, essentially it's hard to determine as a general rule when you need that, but I would say as soon as you have some sort of asset, right? And you consider, so you're living on your own, you have maybe a 401k or an IRA or something to that effect, and you have something or even a savings account, I would then set one up, have a will and get the regular documents going. When referring to a trust, there are a lot of different types of trust and different reasons for establishing a trust. For creditor protection, you could also use it to protect against a nursing home. That's a big issue today in our country with the aging of America, where people are going to nursing homes and they haven't actively protected their assets. So they can end up losing it to long hospital stays and nursing home care. So I would say I see more trust established as a generally in my practice later on in life, usually in people's 60s and 70s. But I think everybody needs a will for the most part, and you probably are only going to have two or three in your lifetime. So that's why I think it's worth working with an attorney.
And for those who are new to this ideas of wills and trust, how would you define a trust in most simple terms for someone who's never thought about it before?
So there to do it high level, there's going to be two trusts, one that you establish during your lifetime that essentially becomes its own entity. And that means it has its own social security, which is an EIN number. And then another type of trust is established through the will. So it only comes into existence upon your passing. Yeah. So trust, we could do a whole session on trust. They're complicated, but they definitely serve their purpose. And that's why you would want to work with an attorney to determine if you need one and when you need one. The one thing that I will say is you always want to be careful when you're working with professionals in any capacity. But so if you're going to go to a trust seminar, they most likely are selling trust, right? Mm-hmm. You know, that's why it's good to establish your own relationship and go work with an attorney that, you know, comes well regarded, because then that way maybe you don't need a trust. You don't want to get sold something you don't need. I also see a lot of people sold trust that really didn't need a trust.
And I am selfishly going to pigeonhole a question that I have myself. Sure. But it's a stepstone from Tamika's question. So I appreciate that. It's actually something that someone said to me. And you know how you hear this in passing, you're like in the barber shop or whatever, and somebody gives you some advice. You panic about it. You don't do any research like the WebMD diagnosis.
Yes. And I'm dying.
Exactly. You always have cancer. I feel like that's like their lawyer told them, just always say they might have cancer. For business partners.
Specifically, since that's the commercial that I always see on TV late at night, is everyone might have mesothelioma. And Cat Williams believes it too.
So for business partners, basically the insight that they told me is a lot of business partners don't set up, although Rich and I are obviously going to live for the next 100 years, that we're going to be that 150 group.
I'm with you. We'll all be friends together at 150.
What do you see that business partners fail to set up as far as what will happen with the business if one of the partners pass?
Have you ever heard that old saying, the shoemaker's shoes, right? The shoemaker has the worst shoes because he's focused on his own business.
Really? You had me looking up and to the left on that one. Okay.
My dad always used to say shoemaker's shoes, which means that his shoes are the worst shoes because he's always busy working. And so business owners are notorious for not doing the right planning for themselves, because the business is, as you both know, running businesses is very time consuming. So that usually gets put on the back burner. And it is very important to do, if you own a business, to do business planning. And that also includes what happens if one of the partners passes away, right? How are you going to handle that?
I like it. Rich, put that in our action items, by the way. Add that to the Trello.
Oh, yeah. I thought that was specifically for us. I was like, you're right. We haven't talked about that.
It's always much better to get all of this done up front when everybody's healthy. What I see often is people call when it's an emergency, someone's sick and they're in the hospital, and now they want to do the planning. Well, that is not the time to do it. You want to do everything when everyone's healthy, of sound mind, right? No emotional stress happening, and sit down and say, we're going to do this. And you only have to really do it once until you want to reevaluate it probably annually or every other year. But you sit down, you figure it out, and then you have that peace of mind knowing that, God forbid, if something happened terrible to either one of you, you don't also have a financial tragedy.
I'd like to amend my earlier will to say that 51% of the business will go to Rich, so he doesn't have to fight with my mama over that, which would be a grudge.
If anything happened to you, Marcus, then it would be your mom taking over your share. So
That's what they told me.
Changes the business dynamic.
I sat back in horror for Rich.
I was trying to imagine.
Trust me, she'd take over. Gladly, I might add. She's probably listening to this episode. I'm going to get a text message about this. So anyway, I'd also, Tamika had a second question. I'd also ask about the best way to optimize taxes while saving for retirement, if you feel comfortable answering this question.
Oh, how to optimize taxes. So what I really like is the work plan, I think, is the best, especially if you're getting a match, because it lowers your taxable income. And I often see people not taking full advantage of it or not taking advantage of it at all. So especially want to get all that free money. And then if you're in a really high tax bracket, especially like, for instance, someone working in New York City, right? You have three taxes. To be in the 401k and to max it out lowers your taxable income. So we can't predict where the taxes will be in the future, but at least for the moment, you're not going to get hit with all those taxes.
And how do you feel about IRAs? I've heard a lot more people talking about IRAs in addition to the 401k over the past year or so. So any guidance or thoughts for someone who's like, should I be opening an IRA right now too?
No. So if you're in your 401k, you usually can't do both. So if you have a 401k available to you or a 403b or whatever your work plan is, usually that allows for a much higher contribution level, meaning, you know, the IRA is $5,500 or $6,500, depending on your age. So your work plan is much higher than that. So I usually recommend using your work plan. And then obviously, and not all the plans have a match, but if they have a match, then it makes it even better.
and folks, that's investment retirement account, unless I've got my acronyms confused, which is.
Yeah. Oh, so an IRA stands for an individual retirement account. A 401k is actually just the IRC code where a work plan, that's typically a corporation. A 403b is typically like a school district. And then a 457 is usually a government entity. And those, in case you wanted any light reading for the weekend, is where you can find it in the IRC code if you want to read about it.
That sounds delicious.
Doesn't that sound delightful?
Yeah. For those folks having trouble sleeping at home.
It puts you right to sleep.
Saying it was delicious was kind of creepy, so my bad, everyone.
I second you, though, so.
I do have a question about that. Again, based on another rumor, it wasn't at the barbershop this time, but okay. I did hear, now I don't know whom would be in this position, but if you have access to a 401k and a 457 or a 401k, and I know some companies are expanding to 401k Roths, is it true that you can invest in all three vehicles that are made available to you?
So I just would have to check the rules. I know that sometimes certain individuals, I've only had it come up a couple of times where they're eligible for both a 457 and a 401k. And I believe with a 457 and a 401k, you can contribute to both. I would just have to double check on the rules on that because they do. I have not seen that recently. Depending on your eligibility, sometimes you can participate in more than one type of retirement plan, like that scenario of a 401k and a 457. 401ks are now more commonly offering a Roth 401k versus the tax deferred 401k. It really depends on your situation, what is going to be in your best interest, whether to use the Roth or the IRA. And some people might even be able to do the combination, to do a little bit in the tax deferred and a little bit in the Roth.
And for the listening audience, I appreciate that response. That did come from another financial planner. I just wanted to get the people to hear that verbally. And that'll be a topic that we'll expand on in the future because I am selfishly very interested in it. This is not a luxury or a problem I have right now, but it is one that I want to have if I can max out both.
Yeah, do you work for a government agency now?
I do.
You do, right? Yeah. So then with your side business, you might be able to also then establish a 401k.
Yeah. So the question was, so people are aware, how do you basically close that gap? So let's say I fund my 401k, I reach financial independence, I retire early or I remain employed, whatever the case may be, I reach financial independence. A lot of people are, okay, well, how do I get access to that money? It seems like it's now locked up in my 401k until I'm 59 years old. And so we were kind of talking about different vehicles for doing so. And then a very knowledgeable, and I don't want to name drop right now because we're going to try to get him on the show. He jumped in and said, well, actually, you can max out both. And then we kind of had a discussion around how you can close those gap years, so to speak. And it got my eyebrows raised. I was like, what? Because it carved out 10 more years in my potential retirement plan.
Yeah. I can confirm for you that you can do both. I'm trying to remember. I had a case where we did do both. I believe it was a doctor that worked for a government and then also had a 401k as well. I just have to go back in my notes and look. But let's just say that you do both. You're able to max out both and then you can reach financial independence earlier than 59 and a half. You can use Rule 72T, which allows you to take money out of an IRA without having to pay the 10% penalty. A little bit more complicated. We have to work with your CPA on the dream team, but that would allow you to get money out without the 59.5% penalty. You're always going to owe tax, so that would be one part of it, but right. The 72T would probably work for you in that case.
And I want to be very clear here and hit two points just in case people missed it there. Mm-hmm. Number one, this is why you need the dream team.
Yeah.
And number two, like probably more importantly of interest to people is this is a way for people to really realize that financial independence. I think people get motivated, then demotivated. They're like, well, I can't get to it anyway until I'm 59 and a half or whatever the case may be. I'm like, well, that's not true if you follow rule number one and you have a plan in place.
Well, that's exactly it. And so for instance, if we were working together, you would say, this is what I want to do. I would confirm the rules. I could work with the CPA to make sure that everything is okay from a tax standpoint. And then that is what we would do, probably do a 72T for when you reach financial independence to alleviate the 10% penalty.
Nice. And then we're going to hit one more listener question here in the interest of time. But this one comes from Jerry. And hey, folks, this was an open call. You could have got your questions here. He asked about having the right amount of term insurance. So I guess I'll expand on that a little. Do you have any advice for trying to calculate the amount of insurance someone needs?
Yes. Well, first of all, I'm a big fan of term insurance. It's actually the type of insurance I have because it gives you the most leverage for what you're paying. So to give you an idea, so I own a business as well. I own two businesses. And so I did my financial planning for my business, which is what we talked about, what otherwise your mom is going to be on the podcast, which maybe she wants, but never know. So when I did my business planning, I had to buy an insurance policy to cover all the obligations I have from the businesses, right? So I have a $2 million term policy and it costs $100 a month. So that's a lot of leverage. So I really like term insurance. But I bought more term insurance than I actually needed just in case I end up having a family that I already then have extra insurance to cover my future family. So there's a few ways to calculate how much you need. I used the financial goals method of calculating it, meaning that I looked at what my obligations were for the business. So let's say that was $1 million. And then I was hoping that I have a family so that I'm going to need an extra, let's say, $1 million to pay off the future family. God forbid I die too young, right? And don't have everything planned out or paid off at that point. So there's two real ways to do it. Income replacement, where you just basically calculate what your anticipated salary is plus whatever increases you are for the time frame you're looking to cover. And then the other method is the financial goals method. And that's the one I use, which is my goal is to pay off the business. So that was free and clear. So that would go to my family. And then I calculated what I thought I would need to cover college for a future family and a husband and a future house. What would I need to cover those expenses? And then I bought all of that insurance early, even though I don't have that future family obligation at this point, but I locked it in because I'm younger and it was cheaper to do it at 29 than wait till I was 35 or 36 when I actually needed it for the future family. So I just rolled it all into one. So there's two real methods to doing it. So one where you just calculate your salary and then the other one where you use your financial goals.
And can you kind of explain what would term insurance entail? So if it kicks in, what does it cover?
So perfect. So great follow-up question, Marcus. Term insurance is pure insurance. You have nothing else but insurance and you buy it for a time period, which is why it's term. It's temporary. So let's say you buy it. So I bought mine for 20 years. So I pay the premium every month for 20 years. It's level term, meaning my premium never changes. And at the end of 20 years, if I don't die, which I'm hoping to be 150, right, with you guys. So at the end of 20 years, if I don't die, then the insurance money keeps all the money I paid them and I have no more insurance. But at the end of 20 years, I should have paid off all my businesses, right? I have two businesses. I should have my mortgage paid off on the house. My future family, well, I'm a little late on starting the future family, but the future family in theory should be grown up, right? The kids that I have in the future should be adults. And I don't really have a need for insurance in 20 years.
Okay. I see what you're saying.
You see what I'm saying? At that point, I have a net worth. Right now, I don't have as much of a net worth. I have more than I did at 29, but I don't have exactly where I want to be. So at the end of 20 years, I should have exactly more. I should have more than what I bought the insurance for.
Okay. I like that. So that'd be like the crossover point. So you buy the insurance to essentially or theoretically close the gap between you have the net worth that would cover the need that you have for the insurance.
Yeah,
basically
exactly.
A break-even point.
Yeah. Because think about it. Do you think Bill Gates has life insurance?
I do not.
There's no financial tragedy if he passes away tomorrow.
It'd be crazy if he didn't have a will.
It'd be crazy if he didn't have a will. And I really hope that he does have a will. That would be the bigger problem. But he doesn't probably have life insurance because he has a net worth. So really, life insurance is there to cover you while you're in the process of building a net worth. And it's the most affordable type of insurance. So it gives you extra room in your budget rather than spending a lot of money on permanent life insurance. You can get term insurance, which is cheaper because it ends at a certain period of time, and then use that difference to invest it and work on your other financial goals so that you have that net worth at the end of the period.
And
just so you know, I also have an online class and we do a whole section on term insurance.
And Jerry had a second question as well. Do you have any thoughts on possibly switching to long-term care before it comes too expensive? What would be the tips on advice for buying long-term care?
Long-term care is a very popular talking point right now because nursing home care is so expensive. To give you an idea, right now in upstate New York, it's running between $10,000 and $12,000 a month. And so what long-term care, isn't that unbelievable? And that's after tax, right? So you think about what you have to make to have $10,000 or $12,000. You could live in like the nicest hotel with full service. There was an article with a woman who lived on a cruise ship. because they have a doctor on board and like laundry service and everything like that. So long-term care covers nursing home care. And it does sometimes cover also at-home care, depending. But then that way, you don't have to come up with the $10,000 or $12,000 a month that it would take to get you the care that you need when you're older. And transitioning from long-term care to from temporary insurance, like term insurance, into long-term care will probably be a big difference in budgeting, because long-term care can be very expensive. The cheapest way to buy it is if you can get it through your work, when they offer, for instance, companies sometimes will have deals with different companies. Insurance companies can come in and offer a group plan to everybody. If you can get long-term care as part of a group plan, that's the most affordable way to do it. What I have been seeing people do more recently, because long-term care is incredibly expensive, and you might not use it. That's the hard part with the long-term care insurance, right? You could pay it for 20 years and never use it. Statistically, in a household of a married couple, one person will need some sort of long-term care. What I like looking at instead is a life insurance policy with a long-term care rider. Because in my opinion, then you have two horses in the race, right? So you're either going to use the long-term care or you're going to pass away. But at least you use the policy one way or the other, either for long-term care. And if you don't use the long-term care, you still get the death benefit.
And while we're on this topic, I'll expand a little bit. I imagine it could be potentially lengthy, so we'll just touch on it at a high level. Sure. What about disability coverage? So I did a quick little search here. This is from the CDC. Okay, good. So it's the first. Okay, it's actually reliable. It says 1 in 5 adults may become disabled during their lifetime. So I know that's something that, first of all, people don't think about insurance, period. And that's also something they don't specifically think about. Do you have any thoughts on disability insurance?
Yes. I normally would say if you can get it through your work, it's usually the most affordable. So usually they offer that's what I was saying with the long-term care. When you go and look at your benefits, most people don't even analyze what the benefits are that the company offers. I would go through and look and see what they have and then see what you can add on. So, for instance, you can usually add on a long-term disability for whatever you get through your company for not that much more. And then that protects you in that instance. And I've seen that work really well. You can also go out and get your own policy as well.
That sounds stressful.
Yeah, I've seen the ones with work, when you go in through work and you go through your benefits, just going through and seeing everything that's offered to you. And then you can add on usually a long-term disability. You can get your transportation pre-tax, right? You can figure out what your match is. I would take available of everything that is already through work.
Yeah. And I'm glad you say that, because when I first got out of school and I went to work, I probably left a lot of boxes just unchecked. I was just like, no, mm-hmm. I just need healthcare. I'm going to get the highest healthcare plan. And that was the other thing. I was like, I'm getting the highest premium PPO I could possibly get, the Cadillac of healthcare plans, even though I'm 22 or 23 and healthy. And there were a lot of other boxes like short-term disability, long-term disability. And I know for some workplaces, short-term disability is covered, but there are a lot of other boxes that I didn't pay much attention to, even 401k contributions, for example. I went years without contributing to my 401k.
Yeah, I see that all the time. And that's why, you know, that's one of the things that we talk about with individuals is, what do you already have available to you that we're not taking advantage of?
Right.
Yeah. And I can, I guess, address 3 points speaking to this so people can have some context. Number one, I think it's funny you still compared it to a Cadillac, because I'm wondering, is that still the go-to car?
I was going to say, I don't think I would use a Cadillac.
I mean, come on, y'all. All right. That's the Acura. That's the Tesla plan.
That's what I would say.
I was like, oh, that was very senior millennial of him.
But a decade ago, a Cadillac might have still been relevant. And that's when I had the thought. So I'm capturing that moment in time.
That's true.
All right, that's nice save. Having a lot of confession moments on the show, not just this show. I'm just, you know, trying to be, you know, I'm human, folks. You know what I'm saying? And open enrollment, the way I found out open enrollment came this year is I got the email that it was closed. Like, I ignored so many emails. Marcus. It was like, look, we just opted you into the coverage you have. I was like, oh. Okay, cool. So that would be my, in full disclosure, you know, do as we say, not as we do.
We do, yeah.
Now, so mind you, I didn't have any major life changes. And then I have a long-term, I think it's disability insurance. I think I have long and short. And that's why I was getting confused. And it's like $2. But yeah. if I for whatever reason, I don't even know what I do. I'm an auditor. So I guess if I stand up too quickly from my chair, my swivel chair, and then like turn my neck to look at an Excel spreadsheet, and I don't know, I get whiplash and I have to go out of work for 3 months. It's 60% of my income. So I just want to give folks, like, I'm paying $2 a month to get 60% of my income. Should I like trip and fall in the hallway and tear my ACL? I don't know what I would do to myself, but anything's possible.
Yeah, I'm in a low impact job as well, so it's hard to get hurt. But you know, the open enrollment's really important because you don't know if they've added new benefits. So it's always good to go shopping there. That's the first place you want to look.
Yeah,
I put this out there in confession. You drive the bus back over me.
No, I'm sorry. But most people don't do it. Like, and then I find out, and then that's how we find money for people to reallocate the budget, is we find out they're paying for all their transportation after tax when they have pre-tax options at work. And they just didn't sign up for them. And then also having, you know, signing up for some of their healthcare expenses pre-tax, they had that available and they didn't do it because they didn't realize how it worked. And like those little savings can add up over a period of time and make a big difference.
The pre-tax commuter benefits, and now, because that's something that I had in New York City, I'm sure that that gets overlooked as well. The other thing that changes with general benefits coverage, and I've seen this with healthcare specifically, is co-pays may change. Deductibles may change on some items, and those are things that could lead you to want to select a whole different plan altogether.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I just want to let y'all both know I'm feeling some type of way about y'all. I try to come to y'all, you know, open up my heart and y'all kick it around.
Now you know for next year.
Yeah, for the benefit of the listening audience, I will sacrifice myself on the personal finance table.
Here, we'll just switch. I wanted to say one more thing about the long-term care insurance. Can we go back to that for a sec? Okay, so long-term care insurance, the other thing with insurance is you need to know, you know, what you're getting and what the benefit of it is, right? So long-term care is protecting if you need nursing home care or in-home care when you're older. But it really only protects, the main purpose of it is really protecting retirement assets, right? Think about it that way. Because we talked about you can do a trust and there's lots of different types of trusts. You can usually use a trust to protect your non-retirement assets. So when you're evaluating your long-term care policy, if it's just a pure long-term care policy, the way to look at it, in my opinion, is how many retirement assets do you have? And is that premium that you're paying worth what you're protecting?
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's a really good way of looking at it.
It should be proportional, right? So if you're going to be spending $5,000 on long-term care premiums, then I would hope that you're protecting something of $500,000 or greater, right? Yeah. If you have $50,000 in a retirement account, most of it's non-retirement, you could use a trust to protect those assets from long-term care costs rather than a long-term care insurance plan.
One other thing that I would note on the benefits front is some companies will actually allow you to submit for your gym expense. So if you are someone who has to keep that gym membership, there are options with some companies where they'll let you submit for a certain portion of that gym membership on a monthly basis, and you'll get credit for it pre-tax as well, which is kind of nice. Definitely encourage people to make sure that they're looking into all these various benefits, the healthcare. I mean, most people look at healthcare, but the long term, the short term, the pre-tax benefits, because a lot of times there's stuff out there that people just really aren't using.
When you actually sit down with somebody and go through their budget and figure out what's available to them, what they're taking advantage of, what they're not, it is fairly easy to find money in people's budgets.
I like it.
Yeah.
And speaking of, we addressed this on an earlier show, but I'll hit it with a hashtag plug for the new audience, the Business Center. So Rich and I, I still am. I don't know if Rich is taking advantage of this. My organization is 57,000 employees. My particular division is 800. So we basically have a really big discount pool because of it. So we have this discount page, and I went in there and there was like travel discounts, like all these things I basically, there was even headphones in there. I think Beat headphones are in there. Like all this stuff I had wasted money on was discounted on this page. It was like this little Amazon page that nobody talks about that we get all these special discounts for. So I challenged the people to go to work. In this case, it would be on Wednesday since we released the episode on Tuesday. Ask for where your discount page is. If it does not exist, you should raise your fist and, you know, have a different discussion. Make sure that you're not paying for these things. For example, I've seen cell phone discounts. I've seen cell phone plan discounts. Ours even had travel discounts. Like, it was crazy what was available on this page. And I think I actually went and looked because of an episode we had of the show. I was like, do we have that? I went and looked, and there's all this money I've wasted over the years glaring me in my face right behind that closed open enrollment email.
And that adds up. Like, if you get 20% on your cell phone plan, that will add up.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I'm actually feeling some type of way about this entire episode. But I will.
So at this point, I think we've each had our episodes where we walk away with our head hung in shame. And today it's you, brother. Next week, it'll be me.
New Monday, new me is all I got to say. So, you know, Barbara has been humble on this show, but she was actually a finalist to pitch Plan Angel to MSNBC's co-host Morning Joe in her Know Your Value episode of It New York City. I'll get this in the show notes in 2017. As one of three finalists, she pitched her business to, I cannot pronounce that name, and
it's Mika Brzezinski.
All right. I appreciate you for coming in. And a panel of star-studded entrepreneurs and celebrities, including Martha Stewart, Bobby Brown.
Yep.
Wow.
Sarah Jessica Parker. let me gather myself. Tracy Anderson and Joe Scarborough. So tell us a little bit about Planancial.
So Planancial is an online financial literacy site. So we have a podcast where we interview, right now we're just doing women about their finances. So we talk about how much they make, how much debt they have, how many assets they have. And as we talked about today on the show, we work on ways on finding them more money and helping them achieve their goals faster. And then I also have an online class, which is through SUNY, which is the State of New York University system. And that has seven different components in it, and it basically follows the CFP. So one of the things we talked about today that we do in depth on the class is term insurance. We also go through another area we hit today, which is estate planning.
And Planancial, it's one N or two N's?
It's one N.
Okay, cool. So for the people, that's PLANANCIAL.com. If you type in another version of that and it takes you to a site that looks shady, leave.
Leave. Yeah, exactly. And you can also get to it from BarbaraGinty.com as well. They're linked.
Nice.
And always, folks, we'll get all of this information in the show notes, which I think is a good segue to the unfortunate closeout, because I know this has been a very meaningful episode for me, myself personally. I got a lot of things I need to change on Monday. But that being said, I hope the listening audience also feels the same. I do have one potential wrap-up question. It is actually optional if you'd like to answer. At the end of the day, I like gossip. You know, some people might be there feeling down like me. They realize they got to get their financial lives together. So I'm actually low-key messy in real life. Is there any like crazy financial planning story that you either dealt with, heard, or can share with the public? Let them know that they're not in this battle alone.
Oh, the craziest story I've heard? Well, this one's a little bit of a sad story, but I did an estate case. A woman passed away not that old. She got very sick and passed away very quickly. And I was helping the family with the estate, and they didn't realize that the parents had already had two bankruptcies and were totally underwater.
Hello.
Yeah. And so they had a rental house and a primary house, and they were able to get the life insurance, because she hadn't paid the premium, were able to get the life insurance extended by 30 days. And if she didn't pass away, they were going to lose everything. Wow. So it was terrible. Wow. That was like the worst. Yeah. And the woman actually worked in finance. So the kids, everyone just assumed that they were good with their money.
Huh.
So that's the worst thing I think I've ever seen. Because if they had put it in the textbook, I wouldn't have believed it. I'd be like, there's no way. So she passed away. They were able to collect on the one life insurance policy. But basically everything was done incorrectly. So the pension option she had chosen was for single life. So the pension died with her. The credit cards, which were run up and maxed out, were all in joint names so that they didn't go away, you know, because the husband was still alive. So those had to be paid. Yeah, everything was just done wrong, real wrong. And so it became a real nightmare for the family. It was a real mess.
And that is actually going to be, so since that was a cliffhanger, that could be a good foreshadowing. I'll get this in the show notes. Our Play Checks and Balances alumni, Broke Millennial, wrote an article entitled for Forbes, Are You Your Parents' Retirement Plan? Dramatic pause.
Yeah.
And so I'll get that in the show notes. People can read that, and then we'll reach out to some additional CFPs to talk about that. And where can the people find you beyond the website, but around the web and on the socials?
Yep. So you can find me on Instagram at Planancial, and you can also check us out on BarbaraGinty.com.
And thank you for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
Well, I feel like I'm ready to put my financial Avengers team together. So, you know, all I need is an eye patch, and I'm going to go ahead and get my financial life right. I know y'all learned a lot on this episode, and so did I. And this was just a sneak peek into the certified financial planning type of interviews that we're going to be doing coming soon. And if you have questions, be sure to hit that hashtag and hit us on any of the social medias, and we'll drop those in a little bit. But of course, I'm sure you're already following along.
So which hashtag are you talking about, brother? I feel like we mentioned a couple of them.
Hashtag PayBal is at least where I'll be searching in the interwebs. But of course, you can at me directly anywhere. The Marcus Garrett, 1T, 2Ts, everywhere else on earth, 1T on Twitter.
If you enjoyed today's episode, be sure to share with your network and hit us with those 5 stars in Apple Podcasts. Today's review of the week comes from Jen in Decatur. At least I think that's what it is.
That sounds about right. And Jen has to say, this is the unspoken information you need. 5 stars. This show is always enlightening and packed with usable information. PB97 was off the charts fabulous. FABOLOUS. It needs to be required listening. Good decisions, saving, investing, being debt-free are great. However, earning more and being intentional are the rocket fuel to get you where you want to be in life. Excellent work, guys! ! Thank you, Gene.
Yeah, Jen, appreciating that 5-star review. So I'm not sure if it's Jen or Gene, but I'm going to go with Jen just for the sake of it. If you want to hit us with 5 stars on Apple Podcasts, be sure to go to paychecksandbalances.com/review. It'll tell you exactly how. And if you're on another platform that allows you to leave 5-star reviews, feel free to do that there. Leave us the 5 stars, hit us with the review there as well, and you might hear yours in the podcast in the future.
Yes, sir. And if you'd like to find us on social media, we're on Twitter and Instagram at Paychecks and Balances, on Facebook at Pay Balances on Twitter. Follow our individual accounts at The Marcus Garrett, 1T on Twitter, 2Ts everywhere else on earth, and Rich is available at I Am Rich Jones.
I am.
Also, as we mentioned up top, don't forget to join our email list by visiting paychecksandbalances.com/email, where you'll receive our weekly newsletter covering actionable work and money tips and much more.
I want to thank everybody so much for listening. We'll be back next week. And until then, be safe. We out. Peace.